Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I teach people how to make a bigger impact with their message using their voice. The voice is the most powerful tool you have if you know how to use it. And the reason is because it is the tool that has the ability to touch our emotions, to compel us to take action, and to change our lives. So I want you to think about the power of your voice and how you're coming along with it. I'd love to help. You know, I've got a couple of really cool challenges. I've been running a podcast voice challenge and a voice on live stream video and webinar challenge. And we're having a lot of fun with that. So check the show notes if you'd like to sign up. It's free. And I'd love to get a chance to work with you. I'd love for you to catapult your career and your personal life simply by sounding more confident. Now, today I've got a really cool guest with me, and I love all my guests, but I really love it when former clients come on the show because we really get to talk about voice and their voice experience. And it's so cool. With me on the show today is a former client and all around amazing and incredibly brilliant guy, Philip Velica, and he's been a mechanical engineer and manager for over 12 years, designing, testing, and building products. He's worked for a broad range of companies, from mom-and-pop small businesses to some of the largest corporations in the U.S. But Philip recently founded the product startup to provide a step-by-step blueprint to aspiring product creators wanting to bring their own ideas to market. Along with his mother, Philip came to the United States as a political refugee from Czechoslovakia when he was 7 years old. They arrived with two suitcases and $80 in cash and left behind all of their family. His journey and success in the U.S. proves that it's possible to create your own luck through hard work. Philip lives in Houston with his wife and daughter. And after his daughter was born, he realized that he needed to focus on his passion and soon launched the product startup. Philip believes that anyone can develop a product using recent advances in technology and tools, and by following the same roadmap many other companies currently use to commercialize their ideas. On his podcast, Philip interviews other founders and shows listeners how they can build their products and brands on a tight budget. How cool is that, right? His hands-on point of view resonates with other action-oriented small business owners and entrepreneurs. I'm super excited for you to hear everything he has to share. Welcome to the show. With me on the show today is Philip Velica, who's been a mechanical engineer and engineering manager for over 12 years. With me on the show today is Philip Velica, who's been a mechanical engineer and engineering manager for over 12 years, designing, testing, and building products from cradle to grave. He's worked for a broad range of companies, from mom-and-pop small businesses to some of the largest corporations in the U.S. His hands-on point of view resonates with action-oriented small business owners and entrepreneurs. Philip is the founder of the Product Startup, a site that provides a step-by-step blueprint to aspiring product creators wanting to bring their ideas to market. Through interviews and successful small business owners, inventors, and Shark Tank winners, he explores the intersection of DIY product development. Along with his mother, Philip immigrated to the United States from Czechoslovakia when he was 7 years old with two suitcases and $80 in cash. They left behind all of their family and almost all of their possessions. His journey and success in the United States is proof that it's possible to create your own luck through hard work. At an early age, he became the man of the house and was responsible for projects fixing things around the house. After college, he pooled his savings, borrowed money from his friends, bought an inhabitable foreclosure, and spent 2 years to make it livable. Philip lives in Houston, Texas with his wife and daughter. After his daughter was born, he realized that he needed to focus on his passion, and the product startup launched soon after. He believes anyone can develop a product using recent advances in technology and tools, and by following the same roadmap many other companies use to commercialize their ideas. On his podcast, Philip interviews other founders and shows listeners about how they can build their products and brands on a tight budget. Philip, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Tracy. Thanks for having me on your show. It's probably the first time that someone's read the entire bio. So I never realized how long that is.
Well, you know, I get a lot of long bios. I had one on an actress the other day that was 2 pages long. And, you know, I didn't read that. But it's so hard to, you know, when you get somebody like you on the show and you look at this and you see, wow, there's a lot of good stuff here. What do you cut? You know, because you've had a great career. You do a great thing. You've got a great story. I mean, $80 and 2 suitcases. You remember that.
Yeah, you know, a little bit. My mom definitely did all the work for sure. If you people, whenever they ask her, they always say, oh, well, knowing what you know now, would you go through that again? And they expect to hear some romantic answer that says, oh, of course, it's totally worth it. And she's like, of course not. I wouldn't do it again. I didn't know what I was getting into. You know.
Wow. Now, did you speak English when you came over here initially?
Mom did. You know, the education system over there is really good. She knew about 3 or 4 languages before coming here: Russian, German, Slovak or Czechoslovak, and then English. But for me, because we transitioned through Greece, I knew some Greek. Actually, I knew Greek really well, but I didn't know any English at all. So I was put in ESL.
That's amazing. And you landed there in Houston. That's where you started.
Started in Indiana, actually. We were sponsored by a church, and we lived there for about 6 months before coming here to Houston.
Wow. Now, see, that's people you guys don't know. I don't know if you know this or not, but that's my stomping grounds. That's where I'm from. That's where I grew up. And I'm not brave enough to handle the traffic and humidity. I had to get out. So good on you. Good on you, Philip. So, all right. So you were and are, but were employed heavily in the work world as an engineer. When did you decide you wanted to be an engineer?
Well, you know, I think when I was a kid, I said I wanted to be a scientist because I didn't know what that meant. I just knew that I wanted to solve problems in a technical way. I was always taking things apart and putting them back together. And even on the way to the States, while we were in Greece and we were sharing a small apartment with another family, you know, we were waiting for paperwork to come into the States. And so mom was, you know, working again, 2 jobs, and we were immigrants there. The whole process took a bit longer than expected. We were walking by a dumpster and I found a dump truck that had been kind of discarded and the front wheel was missing an axle. And I just rummaged around the dumpster and I found like another bolt that went to something else. I think it was like a toilet paper dispenser or something. And I shoved it in there and it worked. And then I kind of pulled it behind me and I thought, wow, like I have this basically a brand new toy for just relatively no work. And it just created this huge sea of possibility for me, like this freedom that I had, this control over my destiny, so to speak, if I just figured out how things worked around me, I guess.
So. That is such a cool story. Oh my gosh. And see, I'm the opposite. I'm the one that sat sobbing in tears trying to put the Christmas toys together on Christmas Eve because I couldn't even follow the instructions, you know, or the pictures or anything else. And I'm just fascinated with that mind of yours.
Well, you know, it's interesting how different minds see different things. My mom is very artistic and she has a huge creative side. And so she's not a science type person like I am. But then because of, obviously we've been really close growing up, it was just the two of us here in the States. A lot of that creativity rubbed off on me for better or worse, I guess. I fought it. So I was always on that fence between, introverted and extroverted and creative and analytical. And I'm still heavily analytical, but it just keeps pulling away at me on the creative side.
Yeah. I find so many people like that. You know, I work with the majority of the people that I work with are analytical, but yet, you know, invariably they bust out with, well, you know, I'm play classical violin, or you know that I've got a, you know, an art gallery full of my own works. And I'm just like, no, I did not know that. So I think that's the perfect blend. You know, I tend to gravitate way too far to the creative artistic side. I wonder sometimes if that analytical brain of mine works, because engineering, you know, I look at, and you didn't do freeways, I don't think, but I look at that and I think, good grief. You know, how does that mind work that builds those things? You were more into oil and gas, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I transitioned into oil and gas. I through high school and went to college and then studied mechanical engineering. And then I told myself I'd never go into oil and gas because that didn't fit with what I wanted to do. And then I ended up in Houston again. that's basically all there was at the time. Started working on that and some products that go subsea, like some of the tools that are used by those remote operated vehicles that go and do the work that's too deep for divers to reach and things like that. So it's a lot of interesting projects where you get to work in an area that's not, it's challenging. I would say it's probably second to space, you know, working on something that's deep sea.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it makes, you know, after hearing the dump truck story, it's such a logical progression into that industry. And certainly what you do now. And so I want to talk about what you do now. And I want to talk about the transition into what you do now, because you don't work in the corporate world anymore, right?
Right. We're having a second daughter.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, that's so cool.
Freudian slip. We had our first daughter. So about 2 years ago, our first daughter was born. And I remember holding her and looking out in the parking garage. My wife was like passed out in the hospital. And I thought to myself, man, I need to do something, because if I don't get off my rear end and do something that I'm connected to at a much deeper level, then I'm going to be, you know, retired and hate myself because of all the regret that I had for not taking full advantage of this life, the opportunities that have been given to me. You know, until now I did the safe path where I climbed the ladder and I was really successful at work, and I took the financially proper roles and the risk-averse roles, because again, growing up, we didn't have a whole lot of money. And so to me, you know, the freedom from stress, you know, especially financial stress, was happiness, I think. And it took me a long time to realize that that's what I was chasing. And then when I finally got it in the corporate world, it really wasn't what I thought it was.
Wow, that's great. So now you do your own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I started the product startup basically that day at the hospital. And I thought, okay, you know what? People have been asking me how they can get their product on Shark Tank, or how they can do their own thing, their grandfather's idea that they've been mulling around and or whatever that is. And I said, well, I'm just going to create a site, and I don't know how to monetize it, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I'm just going to put a bunch of the information out there. And I started writing, and then the following January, I launched it, and then I launched the podcast in March after.
Yeah. And so tell us what it is that you basically do. You help people, all different kinds of people, I guess, with they've got an idea, and you help them from start to finish. Is that, tell us, you say it, because I'm not going to say it right.
Yeah. So in the most basic level, I help people turn their ideas into physical products. My background is mechanical engineering, and that's what I've done the last decade. So it's basically, I've put a lot of that information out there. So you can get it for free through my site, through my podcast. And then when I work with clients, I tend to work with individuals or small businesses who are looking to add a product to their existing revenue stream somehow, that might be tied to their existing service-based business or whatever that is. And I coach them through the process to say, okay, here's the typical steps that you have to do based on, you know, my experience working on different companies and how they've developed their products. And here's how you can maximize your budget and minimize the amount of time that you spend on it through you know, by learning from other people's experiences and, you know, the path that I traveled.
Yeah. So what are some of the challenges that people come to you with? From, I don't know where to start, to maybe getting something wrong along the way? What do you see?
I think so that I'll answer that in two ways. I think people will normally ask, how can I get some rich investor to fund my product? And I think that's the kind of the wrong way about it, because no one's going to really invest in your idea as much as you will yourself. And they're not just going to take you at your word and say, well, I can sell a million of these. So the short answer to that question is you need to develop your product a bit more before you can get investment. But the question they should be answering is, what can I do early on by myself to ensure that the product will be successful? And I think very few people do that. And that's contacting their target audience and working with them to make sure that they really get to the root of the problem that they're solving and creating an elegant solution around that.
That's really good. And I was going to ask for a tip, and there it was right there. And I think we see that across the board, even in my world. You know, don't just jump in and develop a course for them. Find out where they're struggling, you know. And as I've started to really ask those questions to my people, I really am shifting things. You know, I just really didn't realize how traumatic it was for people. I knew because I serve a lot of people with this issue, but really how many people are struggling with voice on video. So that research is just so valuable. So do you think that, and that's, I love what you said, the first thing, because I bet that's true. People don't quite live in the reality. I think people, maybe do they think, oh yeah, somebody's going to give me a lot of money for this. That's what it sounds like. People go into it with an illusion.
So the original audience, or the people that I was attracting, was usually the inventors that want to just tinker and create stuff. And in general, a lot of those people, the reason that they're tinkering is because they want to get a lot of money for it, or they want to quit their day job or whatever that is. And so the motivation behind that is, well, I'll just sell this idea to somebody and then I'll make something off of it and we'll retire. When you talk about going back to your audience, I've actually done that as well, right? So we're getting a bit meta here, but I had to dive into my product startup audience too and say, well, as much as I'd love to help inventors, I really want to focus on people that are existing small business owners or professionals that are too busy, that don't have enough time, because at least those are the types of people that will invest in making progress for themselves, where we assign homework and they're going to go out and do it, versus somebody that's just looking for that quick fix.
Yeah, I love that. I really love that. So we've talked about, you know, and maybe that is the best tip for people, you know, do your research. Now, okay, so let's switch gears. Let's just totally switch gears here, because that was great. Unless you have another tip you want to share for people.
Nope.
Okay. So you have a podcast.
I do.
Tell us the name.
It's called The Product Startup Podcast, and you can find it on iTunes.
And just like the website, I'll put Philip's website in the show notes along with the podcast, the iTunes link, because I know that a lot of you may have a product in your head, in your mind, in the making. And I just love Philip, and I just want you to reach out to him if you do, because man, does he know his stuff. But how long have you been doing the podcast?
So I've been doing the podcast since March, and most of the content is interview content, where I will interview another entrepreneur, small business owner, Shark Tank winner, you know, Kickstarter success story, and we'll break down their journey from when they had that spark to how they delivered the product.
See, that's worth listening to right there, because so many of the people that I know and I know listen to the show, they run these Kickstarters. And there's a method to that madness too, for sure.
Right, absolutely. And dispelling a lot of the myths that people have is something that we spend a lot of time on, because they'll write in and say, hey, just like I want to find somebody rich to fund my product. It's like, well, I'll just pop up a Kickstarter page and people will come to me. You know, feel that they will come.
Yeah. And that's not reality, is it?
And unfortunately, it's not. But by listening to some of these people that have made it, most of these people, I would say at least 80% of the people that we talk to are just like you and me. Or, well, I was going to say just like you and me that don't have any product development experience, but just... Just like you.
Just like me. Go ahead. Say it. I'm not hurt.
That, you know, but they're everyday people. They're people that you would run into that you'd talk with at a coffee shop that were, had an idea about creating a convertible swimsuit and they just went out there and did it. Or they thought that there was a gap in the market for creating cake mix for dogs and they went out there and did it. And now it's 9 years later and they've got a 10-person employee company and they're selling more cake mix on Amazon than Pillsbury.
I see stuff like that all the time and it blows my mind. Like exactly, I did that exact thing on the cake mix for dog. I was like, wow. Okay, first of all, you know, to have that idea and then to bring it to life and then, you know, making 10 times what people with 2 and 3 degrees make, you know, so yeah. Cool.
I don't know how much she's making, but on the flip side, she was able to start the business with a couple thousand. And so she was selling her first cake mix. This is Kelly Costello with Puppy Cake that I remembered. She was on the show. So she went out there in the market and in 3 months she proved it and she was already selling some of her product. And so from that point, it was just scaling. I use the word just.
Yeah.
But it was really difficult.
I just love that story. And there's so many stories like that, you know? I don't know. It's, you know, I just, you guys are going to have to contact Philip to find the formula because there clearly is one because I think everybody probably has an idea. I've had some, but they're not outranking Pillsbury.
Well, you know, what was interesting is that a lot of these people just pursued it because they really believed in it. And
yeah.
You know what? I don't care. I don't have to sell to 10 million people. I just want to solve this one need or I see that there's this gap in the market and I'm interested in it. And, you know, the guys at Mini Materials created these miniaturized concrete blocks that are, you know, a 12th scale or even smaller than that, 64th scale, I think. That's just like a desk toy for somebody. And their idea wasn't even original. They found it at a flea market. They just they're going to improve on it. And now they're producing a bunch of like random miniature construction materials for people that like to like tinker with stuff. And
yeah,
you know, so it's anything's possible.
That's so cool. Yeah, I love those stories. So you always have a guest on your show, right? It's always interviews. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, I have just incredible stage fright when it comes to speaking by myself. And so I'll probably have like 5 or 6 episodes that are by myself, but they're fully scripted. The rest is... You know, the rest of the episodes, I think we're up to episode 40 now, are all guests.
Well, that's where I was going next. So thank you for that beautiful segue. Yeah. We didn't even plan that. Yeah. So yeah, that's where I was going to go next. You know, you're basically an introvert, just like a lot of my audience. A lot of my audience would love to do a podcast. They'd love to get on video. They'd love to do live speaking. And it's just, you know, the brakes come on, not going there. So how was it when you decided to do a podcast? Was there fear? Did you push through it? What do you think of the experience? What can you give us to encourage my people that I'm trying to encourage to do a podcast?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of fear, especially because I would freeze if I didn't have a script in front of me. And so, number one, I will say bottom line is you have to start. If you don't start, you'll have 100% failure rate if you don't start, right? But to the next step is I would advise people that are in my shoes that have a hard time speaking off the cuff like that to just script it out. And maybe you have to do that for the first few times, but you'll get better at it and you'll feel more comfortable at it. And now I'm on episode 40 and the intro and outro that I record for every show that's kind of custom where I put in my thoughts and things like that is getting a lot easier. And then instead of having to re-record it 10 times because I flub a word, I'm only saying it once. So I have a single take now. And it took me, you know, 40 episodes, a 41-hour podcast to kind of push through it. And a year of practice plus working with people like yourself. And you know, eventually I got there, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think that's everybody's journey. You know, I mean, I've worked with a lot of podcasters who, when they came to me, they were running 40 takes, 5 days of edits. And I was like, this has got to stop. You know, you'll hate this thing if you keep at this rate. And so I think it, you know, for a lot of people and that I've worked with, it is a combination of both. Yeah, absolutely. You got to start. You've got to start. And just like when I had Billy Bob Brigman on the show many months ago, he talks a lot about video and how I had to start and I had to get through the first 20 that were horrible. But then I got to 21 and I started to get my groove. And, you know, that's kind of what I hear you saying is, you know, it has gotten easier. It has, you know, yeah, you've worked on it. You've absolutely worked on it. You've practiced it. And, you know, you've worked with people. You know, we got to work together. And now it's you're getting your groove and it's easier. That's what I hear you saying.
Yeah, well, so speaking of video, the video scares me still. And even though I've got all this experience with podcasting and everything, video to me is like, I feel like I'm an American Indian and I feel like video is going to like steal my soul. Like I look at the lens and I just like my brain just goes numb. I forget what I'm supposed to say. I get like sweaty palms and I take like 50 takes. Like it's just not, I'm still not there with video.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't produced a whole ton of videos just because it's not worth the level of effort that it would take to create something usable for the group.
Yeah. I love that you said that because I've always known that people have always contacted me about, people have always contacted me. Can you help me sound better in video? And see, I'm more comfortable on video than I am in real life because I was a television actress. You know, I know what to do when you say action, you know, I know what to do, but I've really, as I've been working on new courses and things over the last few weeks, I've been asking questions and answering questions like we talked about. And there's a whole lot of people still flipped out about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that people have got to get visible, but I think that the caveat to that is at least get audible if you're not going to get visible.
Right. And take baby steps. You know,
I started
interviewing people because I was way more comfortable with having conversations because I'll get lost in the conversation. I won't record video. I'll just put my head down. I won't even have any prepared questions most of the time. I'll have some things that I want to talk about, maybe, but I'm not even thinking about that. Like the whole world falls away. And mm-hmm. I get pulled into this conversation with a person and I'm genuinely interested in what they have to say. And according to my audience, at least that seems to come through. So that's good.
Yeah.
But then that's my trick for just pushing through it. And eventually I practiced that enough to where now in my 40th episode, I'm way more comfortable than I was on the first one. And if you hear the first one, it just sounds terrible. My mom keeps ribbing on me to like re-record it.
I was about to ask, have you gone back and listened to episode one in comparison with 40?
I can't.
You can't do it.
I can't even listen to myself on current episodes. So
really? See, now that's, I'm glad you said that because I saw a controversy the other day about that and I get in conversations about it all the time. Some people are like, I got to listen, I got to watch, I got to do. And other people are like, no way in this lifetime am I watching the playback or listening to the playback. Now see, I'm like that too. I don't go back and listen. Sometimes, but not a lot. So that's interesting. So your mom's giving you busting your chops on episode one, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. She's like, well, you might just want to go back in. And since you're a bit more sure of yourself now. And I'm like, mom, you're kind of bad, man.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So you're not going to give up. You're not stopping the podcast. You're going to keep doing it.
You know what? I'm not. And even though I'm not making direct revenue from it, as was the original plan, right? I was one of these people that says, all I need is a podcast and then I'm going to be rich, right?
Yeah.
All I need is an idea and then I'm going to be rich.
Yeah, right.
So at first I thought maybe I could turn it into something like that, but that kind of disappeared in month three. You know, the first 6 months I flatlined where I had zero growth. Mm-hmm. And then since September of 2016, last year, the last 6 months pretty much had 25% month-on-month growth.
That's great.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I don't know how to, you know, I hang my head, and you guys know me well enough to know this will be no surprise. I don't know. I couldn't put mine in percentage, but I know that when I hit the year mark, I wasn't doing it anymore. I was done. I was just, it was a lot of work. Yeah. I couldn't see where it was going, the work and the expense. And it was just, oh my gosh. And then boom, the new year started and my numbers started doubling and tripling. You know, and I can't put that in a percentage, but I think it just takes time. And I think that's, you know, so much of what I hear you saying is you stick with it. You're going to get better. You push through. You don't give up. You know, a year. I mean, we just don't live in a world anymore where people want to commit to a year. They want to commit to 3.5 hours. You know, yeah. Let's knock it out in 3.5 hours. If I'm not a success by tonight at midnight, I'm doing something else. I feel like.
I think people will say if you can find something that you connect to that gives you that hit instead of, you know, whatever success metric that you're using, something that you enjoy during the podcast. Like I really enjoy talking to the people that I have on the show. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's interesting. It's a huge networking opportunity from a business sense. If you're a podcaster, you're getting to connect to all sorts of people. It even opens doors. You know, I reached out to a large company that I'd been using as an engineer for the last 10 years at various capacities, and they've got so many users, they, you know, I'm just a number on their screen. But now that they're in the same space as the podcast, it was relatively easy for me to pitch them and say, hey, you guys came out with this. That's interesting to my audience. Why don't you come on the show and talk? And
it's great. Yeah, that's great. And I think some of it, you know, I think some of it is in the instant gratification thing for many people, but I think some of it's shiny object too. Oh, look over there. I'm going to go over there and do that for a while now instead. And so it's, you know, it's definitely that slow and steady wins the race for sure. But that's great that it's been such a good platform for you in reaching out and they are. I just see them exploding and being more popular. And I'm hearing talk about companies using them in-house for training and all of that. And so I'm just really excited about it. And I'm like you. I love the conversations that I have with people. You know, I love learning about their business. And I love learning and talking about their voice struggles and communication struggles. Because I don't care what you do, you got to use your voice to do it. Right?
Right. Right.
You know,
that's the beauty of podcasting is that connection that you make to people that normally you wouldn't, that if, especially if you live in a smaller town, or, I mean, I live in Houston and Houston's huge, but through podcasting, I have this ability to basically contact anybody in the world. A lot of the recent guests that I've had on the show have been from Australia and the UK. And it's really interesting to see how they approach solving problems versus maybe people on this side of the world.
Yeah, I love that. My friend Charlie Posnick, I don't know if you know him or not. He owns the Boomer Business. He's a Boomer Business owner company. Great guy. And he podcasts. He has one rollout every day. And, you know, he's been on my show. I've been on his show. I just really, really admire him and his work. And he says it's not even just what's come out of the podcast as far as the podcast and the people the revenue or anything like that. It's the relationships that I've had the opportunity to build. And I mean, he's just had guests, wonderful people, you know, from around the globe like that. And, you know, I certainly have too. And that's what's so cool about all this is that's the world we live in. I think at any given time, I have less clients in the U.S. than I do in other countries, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, just people from all over the world. And my audience, too. I have a big Australian following as well. And, you know, just everywhere. And it's so cool. It's such a wonderful way to get in touch with people. So you do one show a week, I believe. Is that right?
That's right. Weekly show now. I was doing it every other week while I was still working at my day job.
Yeah, but now you're full-time product startup guy.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you like to build your own things?
I do. So we're recording in my workshop right now. I've got all my tools around me. I love tinkering. I haven't had enough time for that lately. I'm choosing to spend more time on the business, I suppose. I enjoy hands-on stuff. And that was kind of the impetus for all of this was to merging my DIY you know, roll up your sleeves type attitude towards product development.
And you're kind of like me. You're a one man show right now. You do it all pretty much, right?
That's right. Yeah. Take out the dishes and get daycare on occasion and
yeah. And billing and, yeah. and marketing and interviewing and client work. What is, do you find it challenging sometimes?
Yes. I find it challenging all the time.
Yeah.
Because in my past roles, if you tend to work for somebody, you get put into a box, even if the box is really big. But you have a box that says, here's what's going to come into that box, and here's what you've got to spit out of the box. And this is how we're going to rate your performance. And eventually you'll get a handle on all that. And yeah, you start pushing the boundaries and whatever. But at least that there's some sort of a framework. And with this, there's just never ends. You can always spend more time promoting, marketing. You can spend more time networking. You can spend more time selling, tweaking the website. And especially as a technical, like super detail-oriented guy like me, I will spend, you know, 5 hours to automate a process that I might only do a few times a week, but it's just like this tick in my head that says I have to automate it and I have to streamline it and I have to, mm-hmm. you know, create a system for it. And so I constantly battling that with, you know, creating content and just all the other things that there's no right answer. You know, you don't Google the question that says, Google, what should I be working on this week?
Right.
What is going to give me the most growth in my business this week? Go.
Yeah. The overwhelm gets really challenging for me sometimes, especially as a single mother, because it's not just working for yourself. It's getting the dog walked and the groceries bought and the house cleaned and this child to school and back. And so it can get tremendously challenging, but would you trade it? Would you go back?
That's a tough question. I think I wouldn't trade it. I think it's definitely, if I can make this work, it will definitely make me more happy than I was working under the fluorescent lighting and corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that caveat that, you know, if everything falls into place, which, you know, you'd absolutely want it to, and I'm working my rear end off, so I have no regrets.
Yeah.
But there's no, you know, at work, I was consistently one of the top 10% performing employees. I'm used to being this like overachiever where I just like outwork people next to me. I might not be the smartest guy in the room, but I will absolutely roll my sleeves up and like push through. And I'm finding that approach isn't necessarily the right approach for being your own boss, because just because you're working so much on all these different things, it doesn't mean that you're working on the right things and that they're hitting and they have the return that you're expecting from your time.
Oh, that's valuable. Boy, that is that's been the hardest learning curve for me. Mm-hmm. There's no formula in many, many ways, is there?
Well, you know, talk to other people and see what they're doing, but that doesn't mean that you will be successful in that way. As a podcaster, you can look and see, wow, that podcast got to 100,000 downloads in 2 months. Let me see if I can replicate that. But you can't, because you're in a different space with mm-hmm. different people. And, you know, or let me try Facebook ads this week, because that seems to be working for that next person. But, and it's not, you know, it's not as easy as the gurus make it out to be.
No, it is not. And there's so much trial and error. So much trial and error. And, you know, I know this isn't the issue for you, but for me, some of this technical stuff is slow for me. You know, the learning curve has been quite steep, and that's what it's all about. It's putting it out there and, okay, that didn't work. Let's tweak it this way and do it again or do this or do that. But I think sticking with things to see and trial and error and testing is crucial. So, well, I just thank you so much for being on the show. I just love what you do. You know, as soon as I get a little product in my head, whenever that happens, I'm going to look you up. But I want everybody who does have those ideas, because I know so many people do. I hear so many cool thoughts and ideas about, you know, what people come up with. And I know you can help them bring it to fruition. You've got the goods on that. So thank you so much for being here.
Tracy, thanks so much for having me on the show. It was my pleasure being on, and thanks again for all your help as a coach. I think it definitely helped me to be a much more confident speaker.
Oh, that's so great. Well, you were great to work with. You're a great student. You brought that being the best to your work, and there's always results there. So, guys, I'm going to put Philip's website and podcast information in the show notes. I highly encourage you to check out his podcast. It's very, very good, and he really has wonderful guests on the show. I think that you'll really enjoy it on your drive to work or when you're running or whatever you do. And I appreciate you. I thank you for your shares and your downloads, and of course your reviews. They really help me in the search rankings. So that's it for now. Until I see you next time, get out there and speak your truth. Just do it beautifully.